This is the Reason Podcast, and I'm your host, Nick Gillespie. Please subscribe to us at Apple, at Google, at Spotify. You can listen to us at that great streaming service, or catch up with us at Reason.com as well. And wherever you go, rate and review us if you can. It's always good to hear about what you think. Today, I am talking with Wolf von Lahr. He's the CEO of Students for Liberty. And I'm also talking with David Clement. He is the Director of External Relations for SFL, who have their great annual international conference that pulls together 2,000 students and activists and people interested in libertarian ideas in Washington, D.C., 2,000 of them, January 17th through the 20th. We're going to be talking about what the agenda is at LibertyCon, who's going to be speaking there, and as importantly, what are the key issues that are facing younger people, not just in America, but in Europe, in South America, in Africa, all over the world. Wolf and David, thanks so much for talking with Reason today.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you very much for having us on.
And David, since you are kind of like the day-to-day guy running the show and everything, could you tell people where is the best place to go to online if they want to check out the full agenda, the speakers, and how much it costs to go to LibertyCon?
Yeah, the best place, if people are interested in attending, the best place to find more information is www.libertycon.com. On there, they'll be able to see all of the great speakers that we have. And what's actually unique for Reason subscribers or for Reason listeners or supporters is they can use a discount code called Reason, just simply spelled out, that actually reduces the cost of a ticket by 40%. So if they like what they see, they can attend the conference. And because they're a supporter of Reason and you guys are such a valued partner for us, that discount code will take 40% off of their ticket.
Well, that is very generous, and it'll make it possible, I guess, for all of our fans who are heavy in Bitcoin, maybe to be able to actually afford being able to come this time around.
Yeah.
So LibertyCon, you have let me start with you, Wolf. When you run a group like Students for Liberty, what are the key issues that are in front of the kind of student movement or the youth movement for liberty? And are they the same issues globally, or does it shift radically from one region to another?
Yes, they do change quite a bit. We are internationally. I mean, that's the reason I also have a strange name and a strange accent, because I'm a product of the organization myself. I started the European Students for Liberty movement starting in 2011, which is now in every European country, we also in Israel and beyond. And it really does change quite a bit. But I think there are common threads which you can see across the world, which would be, first and foremost, of course, fighting socialist ideas. Universities are breeding ground for those, not only in the United States, but in many countries abroad. In some countries, really, there are even universities with economics departments where you still have Marxist scholars teaching economics, which is like mind-blowingly stupid that those ideas are still there. But that does still happen. And many of the students are attracted to socialism, or what you call here in the United States nowadays, democratic socialism, whatever that means. And that is really a common thread. Another thread is that we have seen, not only in the United States, which Reason has reported on and some of your fellows are writing books about, is free speech. We are fighting that every single day. But also we have issues seen at my alma mater, at King's College London. Yaron Brooke, a speaker from the Ayn Rand Institute, he was being attacked by people from the left. And that we have seen now in the UK. We've seen this popping up in Australia, and now in some places in other places in Europe as well. And that is really something that we worry about and focus a lot about. And we are focusing on building bridges instead of saying, like, look, we are right. We have the right ideas. Read Hayek and slap them over the head with human action or with the road to serfdom and say, like, you have to read this. You have to believe in this. We're rather trying to find like a dialogue and tell them like why they're wrong when they attack free speech.
What, David, one of the marquee events is actually going to be a conversation about free speech and I guess related constitutional rights, featuring Randy Barnett, the Georgetown law professor, who is probably the most highly regarded libertarian legal scholar around, and Alan Dershowitz, who is a fascinating figure over the past 50 years of American jurisprudence, always a strong liberal and mostly a civil libertarian. He's also been in favor of some, very kind of sketchy, from a kind of doctrinaire libertarian point of view, sketchy defense of certain types of, like, really nasty kind of military adventurism and whatnot. And he is, he appears now as sometimes a defender of Donald Trump in various, on TV and whatnot. What is that debate about, and why is that an important, why was that important to have on the program?
Yeah, so the reason why we put something like that together is to have a conversation, obviously, between the two that has some of these more nuanced or nitty-gritty discussions beyond the headlines that obviously everyone gets so bogged down with. They both have a resume that is incredible. And so the fact that we can have both of them discussing various constitutional issues that are present today, they both have obviously varied perspectives on different issues. And so we really think it embodies not only what SFL is about, which is very much having that conversation and encouraging discussion, debate, and really trying to push the envelope in terms of exposing people to new ideas, but also taking that one step further and really getting the most out of these two individuals who have so much to offer in terms of their insights. So we're really, really excited about how fascinating that conversation will be. And that actually takes place at our annual awards dinner, which is on the Thursday of the conference.
So, what about Trump? And it's not just Trump, because Trump is obviously an incredibly divisive and polarizing figure who, from a libertarian point of view, and I can even see this happening among my colleagues, but also other people I know in the libertarian movement, where he is so odious in so many ways, just on a kind of personal, the way that he carries himself, the way he speaks, the way that he tweets, many of his specific actions, are profoundly just kind of gross and vulgar. Then there are his policies, some of which are pretty damn great in terms of libertarianism. I think in terms of some of the tax reform that was made possible by him that happened last year, but also deregulation at various government agencies like the EPA and the FDA and the FCC. And I'll be interviewing the FCC chair, Ajit Pai. We'll be talking about net neutrality and, has anything bad happened since that was repealed and what's coming in 5G revolution, et cetera. But somebody like Trump, and there's a long-winded kind of wind-up here, I guess, to you, Wolf, Trumpism, is it a problem for libertarianism? Is it an opportunity? Is it nothing one way or the other?
Well, I think it really depends. What you see, especially over the early stages of Trump's presidency, is you have libertarians who struggle with a president who is of such poor character. You have those who kind of see the silver lining of various policies, like you mentioned, the FDA or the FCC. And then you have those who have kind of become supporters and support the more populist and, in some instances, very anti-liberal, anti-libertarian policies. And so I think the Trump era is something that is still very much a question mark for the libertarian movement. I mean, much of the modern movement, if we want to call it, in the post-Ron Paul revolution, was very much built in the era of a Democrat as president. And so there are some of these ongoing issues, and that's part of the reason why this conversation is so fascinating, is because there are a variety of opinions, There are people who see the Trump presidency as an opportunity. There are people who see the Trump presidency as a very worrying signal
as something where we have to put aside our disagreements with people on the right or the left to defeat him, you know, kind of in a united resistance. Because, you know, which I also find, you know, kind of stunning. It's, you know, it's amazing that he's pulling troops out of Syria in a way, you know, that Barack Obama didn't do. And he's anti-immigrant, but Barack Obama was kind of anti-immigrant. George Bush might have been better on immigration. I don't, you know, I don't know. He's terrible on free trade. But Wolf, how do you balance these things? And especially, you know, the one thing that seems to be true is that Trump is you know, he is like bear repellent to young people. They don't he does not seem to, you know, he didn't do well with younger voters. And does that also flop over into younger libertarians? Is he like a turnoff in such a way that you have to be against him completely in order to get anywhere with younger libertarians?
Yeah, and we are seeing the same thing with our students. Like, some of them like him and some people really hate him. But it's really what is unique about us that our students don't give in the cult of personality. Even the people who might be like more favorable to him would admit his flaws and would look more subtly on that. Whereby what we're seeing in society in general, in politics in particular, and also on campuses, that people really just give in to the cult of personality. They say like, okay, if you say something positive about Trump, you're a Trumpist, you know? And people don't really distinguish about all of these issues anymore, which is very problematic. Of course, you have to point out where he's like considerably bad in general, which is just making everything more polarized and having the United States appear more like a Latin American country where the left and the right cannot talk to one another anymore because it's so, so charged. That is a huge issue. But what I really think what our students are doing better is that they can have more subtle conversations about that and reach out to both sides on the aisle to have, again, this civil discourse. And I think that makes us unique and that makes it possible to have thousands of students within Students for Liberty, but whereby people from different viewpoints with different stances on Trump can come together and have a respectful and productive conversation where people don't raise their voices.
Well, you know, if I'm gonna pitch one of the things that Reason is doing, we have a panel that I'm gonna be moderating that features Faisal Al-Muhtar, Saeed Al-Muhtar, of a group called Ideas Beyond Borders. That is, they translate books, you know, books by people like Sam Harris and Steven Pinker into Arabic, and then they release them as free ebooks into the Arabic world to try and get ideas, you know, new ideas put into that, along with Christina Hoff Summers of the American Enterprise Institute, who has a very highly consumed podcast called Femsplainers, who is the factual feminist who pushes back both, you know, certainly against patriarchy, but even more so against kind of shoddy use of statistics and argumentation by kind of radical feminists. And we also have Brendan O'Neill, who's the editor of Spiked, a really provocative, you know, free speech forward magazine or website based in England that is the remnant of an old magazine that used to be called Living Marxism. So, you know, and they're going to be talking about how to maintain or how to kind of generate and sharpen and circulate and distribute heterodox ideas in an era where everybody seems to belong to one team or the other. So, you know, that to your point, Wolf, I think, you know, we're the conference is always interesting because it brings that, you know, that sense of colloquy and dialogue, even in a group that is, you know, profoundly libertarian.
And Dave, a different perspective altogether due to the fact that we have many international participants always coming to this conference. To give you an example, I mean, the United States talks about Trump all day, every day. He's a phenomenon. But if you talk to some of our students that have held the first event that we had in Afghanistan this year, where 70 people showed up to talk about classical liberal ideas, and that event, and you talk to them and you realize the event was delayed for 2 hours. Why? Because there was traffic on the road because there was a suicide bombing. But it's normal for them. Right. Like, this is just mind-boggling, and we can really don't fathom that. But they said, like, okay, this happens. Nobody got hurt from who attended the event and from us. But they just showed up and talked about these ideas because they're so important. And they're so important independent on who is in office. And that message is really an opportunity where Reason, Students for Liberty, many other organizations within the movement could make more headway for people who are on the fence either way.
Yeah, it is, you know, when you were talking about kind of cults of personality, even, you know, as much as I think Americans, you know, pick and choose presidents as, you know, kind of like avatars and that you would be playing, you know, in World of Warcraft as or something like that. You know, even people like Trump or Barack Obama or Ronald Reagan, who's probably the most beloved president, I guess, at some point, you know, we don't care about them the way that it, you know, it, I mean, it's good. It's healthy when we they're not the center of our universe, either as an object of scorn or an object of adoration. You know, when we look globally at populism, and, you know, and I mean, there's the Venezuelan cult of personality, which hopefully is going down the tubes before more people are, you know, severely damaged and oppressed there. But in places like Europe, you know, you see a lot of this as well. Is it is populism is it a global wave or is it a series of local kind of developments that we're linking together because that's what we do by default? But in fact, these are profoundly independent movements. Or are we in a new zeitgeist now where something is happening where populism is on the rise? And if that's the case, how does libertarianism counter that movement?
Yeah. So from my perspective, I think that the rise of populism, if we call it that, is more or less a response to the changes that we've seen across the globe over the last, let's say, 20 or 30 years. So I do think it's something that is growing. Now, I say that with an asterisk that obviously there are kind of local flavors depending on where you are, and there are differences in terms of political endeavors or political policy as well, in terms of what counts as populism. So you have the populism that is represented on the right in terms of what's going on in Brazil, or let's say someone like Donald Trump. But then again, you also have populism on the left, the politics of Bernie Sanders, and kind of that more extreme progressive viewpoint. I think the role for libertarians here is to stand our ground in terms of the value of these classical liberal ideas and the importance of defending them and highlighting the success and prosperity that these ideas have, the success and prosperity that these ideas have generated for people around the world, not just in North America, not just in the United States, but in the developing world, in poor countries. And so I think really what our job is as those classical liberals / libertarians is to hold our ground throughout this populist wave, to continue to advocate for these pro-liberty ideas and try and chip away at where these populist movements really turn their head into these ugly collectivist big government policies or approaches.
Yeah, and let me make a nerdy libertarian social scientific point, if I may. It also really shows from the data that the West in general and many more countries beyond that become more and more polarized over the last couple of decades. So it's a phenomenon that's born out of statistics. And I think the result of, like, I think this is based because our democracies have become so big. If you live in Switzerland and you vote there in your canton, it makes sense. It matters. You know the local judge. You know to which pub they're going. You can yell at them if they're doing something that's against the Constitution. There's a different form of feedback within such a society compared to a society where you have like 300 million people, where they vote for like one president about hundreds of issues, which are infinitely complex. So I think the reason why we're seeing this is because people feel disenfranchised, because they know that their vote doesn't really count, because they have like an infinitesimal small impact on the elections. And if we had more radical federalism and more decision-making on the ground, we would A, have more experimentation, B, more accountability, and C, there would be so much more meaningful discourse because people would see their actions and what their actions mean in terms also of costs. Right now, you can vote for something as stupid as a wall for several billions of dollars, and you would not bear any of the costs yourself. It would be diffused throughout society, and people don't feel the consequences of their vote.
Well, and
I think
that's
contributed to that.
Yeah, I think that you're right about that. But then there's also the kind of economic analog to that, where people feel like their effort doesn't matter. I don't actually buy that. But I think that's one of the arguments that you hear, that people feel disenfranchised in a global economic system because it doesn't matter if you work hard. Your job is just going to disappear, or prices will go up, or products will, you know, disappear from the shelves regardless of your actions. And I think that's a profound misunderstanding of how economies work, particularly in the United States. But it seems like that's also driving some of this populist moment, both on the right and the left, that, you know, your individual efforts and actions are delinked from any kind of outcome that you might have in your life.
That's true. But I think the 1 billion people that over the last one or two decades got out of absolute poverty would strongly disagree with that.
I agree. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think we need to push that more and more, and not only use the data, but also tell the stories behind that, because it's difficult to understand what 1 billion means. But if we would be able to break it down more and tell them that this is a family in China or in India that have a choice now to get their kid into a good school compared to see their kid die when they're like 4 years because of malnutrition. This is like real things that have happened.
I agree. And it's fundamentally, it's fundamentally the result of market, you know, kind of globalization and markets reaching more parts of the world. Earlier in the fall, a couple of groups announced that a majority of people living in the world have effectively, when you look at purchasing parity and whatnot, are in the middle class, which is unbelievable. And it's a great success story. And yet, you know, those of us in developed economies spend all of our time talking about how there are no jobs, or there is no meaningful work, or that, you know, factory jobs are disappearing. It's an incredible disjuncture. And I think, you know, again, to talk about LibertyCon specifically, one of the things that has always been fascinating to me, and I've been going to these things, I think, since the very first one or one of the very first ones, but is that when you meet people who come not simply from other parts of the U.S. or other parts of the West, but, you know, all over the world, particularly the developing world, you know, you get a much better sense of perspective of how varied the world is and how many parts of it are just going gangbusters in a very good way. David, would you talk about a couple of the headliners and what they're going to be bringing to LibertyCon?
Absolutely, absolutely. So, I mean, the first kind of notable speaker who's worth mentioning is Steve Forbes. He doesn't need much of an introduction in terms of who he is, but what he'll actually be talking about, which is ever so relevant in terms of current conversations politically, is the rise of fake news and what to do about it. And so to hear from someone like Steve Forbes, who's obviously been in that media space for so long, about whether fake news is an issue, whether it's new, whether it's an old phenomena, whether or not any action is needed on it at all, it provides our attendees a really unique opportunity to hear from someone who has been around for a long time and really tap into his wealth of wisdom on the subject. So that is the first headliner, definitely worth mentioning. Another one that you mentioned is the FCC chairman, Ajit Pai, who will be having a conversation with you on the Friday evening of the conference, talking about things like net neutrality and what the end of net neutrality has done to the way in which consumers engage with these internet providers, and answering some of those various questions. And then that Friday programming will actually conclude with Congressman Justin Amash, who for most libertarians is one of the leading kind of pro-liberty voices in Congress, one of the only few who's left. And so we're really excited with the Friday programming. Those are all the Friday programming that we've secured thus far. And so we really think that it's a top-notch program to open up the conference on that Friday evening.
Well, and of course, on Saturday, and I'm going to promote Reason a little bit while I have you guys on the phone. Reason is going to be having a bunch of panels, including a discussion of gaming and how it relates to various forms of self-expression with Catherine Menge Ward and Peter Suderman. We're also, Catherine, the editor-in-chief of Reason Magazine, is also going to be talking with Robbie Suave about his book that'll be coming out in June about the new campus activism. It's a wide-ranging look at people who, both on the right and the left, and what is driving millennial and Gen Z activists on campus. We're going to do a live version of Reason Magazine where for about an hour we're going to kind of tell stories and jokes and do a bunch of things. It's kind of like the Prairie Home Companion, but for Reason, hopefully with fewer problems than, Garrison Keillor tends to drag along, with himself. And then we're also, going to be, talking to a bunch of heterodox thinkers, as well as Matt Welch is going to be talking with William Weld, the former two-term governor of Massachusetts, who was the Libertarian vice presidential candidate last time around and is a pretty fascinating guy when it comes to talking about, retail politics and bringing in more libertarian ideas rather than more conservative or more liberal ideas. Wolf, who are you looking forward to?
Absolutely. That would be Arthur Brooks for me, because I think his communication style is one of the best within the broader liberty movement. He is heading, of course, the very famous think tank, the AI, and he has very good talks about how we have to speak to the heart and talk to people that we really care about them, because very often the criticism towards classical liberals is that we don't care about people. It's all about the individual and me, and don't tread on me and all that kind of stuff. And he's presenting a very different narrative and a very interesting and well-delivered one. And he's a fantastic speaker, so we're glad to have him there.
David, who are some of the other people that'll be showing up on Saturday?
So a couple other items that I'm super excited about. We have a universal basic income debate. That'll be between Jeff Myron, who is from Harvard, and Andrew Yang, who is a Democratic candidate for president in 2020. So that will be exciting.
And that's, of course, fascinating, because the universal basic income, which is one of these ideas that had been kind of sitting on the back of a shelf somewhere for a long time, is getting a lot of play. And people such as Milton Friedman talked about it back in the day. Charles Murray, the scholar at AEI, wrote a book kind of promoting it. And it's one of those things that has adherence on the, on the right, on the left, and the center. So what's your sense? Is Andrew Yang for real? Because that's his basic platform, right? He wants to implement a universal basic income, partly to minimize the dislocations of modern economies, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say where he'll end up after the whole primary process, but I definitely do think he's for real. He's the real deal in my eyes. I certainly think he's a more market-focused Democrat, which is a bit of a positive. Mm-hmm. Whether or not you agree with the main platform, the main policy that he has as for his platform, which is the freedom dividend. But we're excited to host him. A conversation between him and Jeff Myron from Harvard is going to be fascinating. We also have someone who has been a libertarian for a long time, but not many libertarians have heard from in a while, which is Rupert Bonham. For anyone who was a Survivor fan, Rupert is actually a bit of a legend when it comes to that popular reality TV show. And he ran for governor as a libertarian in Indiana against Mike Pence. And so he'll be at the conference. It'll be a unique opportunity for people to hear from him. And outside of those two, we also have a cannabis industry panel, which is going to focus on some of the big questions that are now looming, given that the kind of tide of legalization seems to be coming in. And that will feature two industry executives, as well as Bill Weld, who is now in the cannabis space. So there's certainly a little bit of everything for attendees at this conference.
That sounds fantastic. And again, you can go to libertycon.com to see a list of speakers and more details about that. Remember, if you register and you use Reason as your discount code, you'll get 40% off the registration price. LibertyCon takes place July 17th to 20th in Washington, D.C. Let me close out, guys, by asking this question of, Wolf, you brought up Arthur Brooks and talking about, reaching the heart as well as the head. And I guess, David, in talking about pot, you're trying to reach the brain in a slightly different way there, too. But, Is that something that young people are particularly, younger libertarians are particularly asking for? Because it does seem like and it's not emotionalism by any stretch, but it is, the world seems to a lot of younger people to be a kind of stark and foreboding place. Do we need to step up the way in which we say libertarian ideas, libertarian concepts, policies, systems reach more than, kind of an accountant's balance sheet?
Oh, yeah. I think that we, and this is very much the mantra that we at SFL have, is that in order to really highlight the value of liberty, you have to speak the language of the people you're talking to. And I don't just mean the actual language. I mean speaking to what matters to them most, because there are ways in which liberty can make a positive impact to anybody's life, but they have to see it beyond the kind of strictly individualistic worldview that some people have and some people really stick their guns to. And so I do think it's important for us to have that appeal where we approach things from a perspective that seeks common ground, that wants to have that conversation, rather than simply patting ourselves on the back for being as ideologically pure as possible.
Every podcast that has an Adam Smith citation is a good one, and yours especially. I would say that Adam Smith says that man does not only want to be loved, but also wants to be lovely. And it's very true. We want to be good human beings. And it's not enough to argue that minimum wage will lead to like a 1.2 increase of unemployment. Like, nobody gets excited about that besides very few accountants, as you've mentioned. But it's also about to tell the stories behind that, to bring the data to life, and to show what our policies actually do for the world. And Deirdre McCloskey and other thinkers that you've had here on the podcast as well, they make this important point, because it's really about the people that are affected by this, that have no more opportunities, that don't have to see their children or themselves suffer. This is so important. And I think young people specifically, if you look at millennials or Generation Z, they want to belong, they want to be part of a group, and they want to be good. And politics is mostly about that. It's about virtue signaling. But if you combine the power of our arguments, where you can demonstrate how much classical liberal policies can bring about a more just, a more free, a more prosperous society, plus also like having them understand the ideas and give them a community of people who are cool, who wear leather jackets like you, Nick, who understand all of that, but who are all nice human beings with whom you would love to have a beer with, that's, I think, will be the solution in order to make our ideas more popular.
Well, you know what? We're going to leave it there. That's a nice summary. We have been talking with David Clement. He is the Director of External Relations at Students for Liberty, as well as the CEO of Students for Liberty, Wolf von Lahr. And we've been talking about the Students for Liberty's annual conference that's held January 17th through 20th in Washington, D.C., LibertyCon. You can go to libertycon.com to register for it. Put in Reason as a discount code and you'll get 40% off, which is pretty good. David and Wolf, thank you so much for talking.
Thank you very much, Nick.
Thank you.
This has been the Reason Podcast, and I've been your host, Nick Gillespie. Please subscribe to us at Apple, at Google, at Spotify, at Reason, wherever you go. Thank you for listening.